You're listening to Old New Borrowed Blue on 2SER with your host, Joel Kassam.
Hello and welcome to Old New Borrowed Blue here on 2SER, on 2SER.com and on iTunes. Joel Kassam is my name. Thank you so much for joining me today. So this is the program where a special guest joins me in the studio to talk about themselves and play four songs that have meaning to them. And basically, I do nothing. It's great. All right, let's find out who we've got this week. My guest today is a man with the incredible ability to answer just about any science question you throw at him. He's arguably Australia's most loved scientist. If you have a question, I'm almost certain this man will know the answer. About to release his new book, Carl, the Universe and Everything, a brilliant mind who is also known for his wonderfully loud shirts, I am so excited to say I'm joined by the man Google turns to when it doesn't know the answer, Dr. Carl Krzyżanowski. Hello, Dr. Carl.
Dr. Joel, you're too kind, but I'm not that smart. My IQ is only 110, which puts me in there with two-thirds of the population between 85 and 115. And in fact, with each passing generation, the IQ goes up by 9 IQ points. We call this the Flynn effect.
But if you can remember so much, surely that means IQ is sort of taken out of the picture because you just have the knowledge there.
IQ is different from memory. And I'm sort of cheating there because, firstly, I've had the advantage of 28 years of free education. And that includes 15 years at university. And I apologise for Australian government changing and no longer seeing education as a worthwhile investment in the future, but just seeing it as a way that businesses can then privatise and you apply the laws of supply and demand and you make the some schools worse so people have to put their money into private enterprise, which makes the people who run those schools richer. Yeah. I'm sorry they've done it. I apologise. No. So that's the first part of the package. I had 28 years of free education. And the second part is that I read my way through $10,000 worth of scientific literature every year. That's a pile a metre thick every month. I read my way through that pile and I find the interesting bits and I turn it into stories. The last bit is the most important. So there's a free education, then there's the continual scanning of the literature, but then the last bit turning it into stories. Because if you don't turn it into a story, you just got this sort of fuzzy stuff in your head, like is Mount Everest 2,800 feet tall, or is that the size of Kim Kardashian's bank balance? I forget. You know, and so if you turn it into a story, that forces you to formalize it, and the human brain is wired up for remembering stories. However, I do forget my older stories because as I make up new ones, the old ones get sort of pushed out. I've only got a finite amount of RAM. I'm sorry.
I love to start this show by asking guests where they grew up and what they were like when they were younger. Now, I'm pretty sure most people would know Dr. Carl now, but what was younger Dr. Carl like?
Well, I grew up in a refugee camp at the border of New South Wales and Victoria, and then rapidly moved to Wollongong, where I went to Catholic schools in Wollongong, and then went to university there, and then worked at the steelworks, and then went to New Guinea and did research into hair and wool, and then came back and became a drug-crazed hippie and went through a parallel series of careers that don't overlap, so therefore, because like in a Venn diagram where nothing overlaps, I don't exist. And so I had different careers in cab driving, filmmaking, being a labourer, and being a car mechanic and a TV weatherman and a biomedical engineer and author and a whole bunch of other jobs. And a roadie for Bo Diddley, if you've ever heard of Bo Diddley.
Yeah, no, I was all those things too. That's incredible. You've certainly lived, haven't you?
Well, you only get one chance at living. Mm. And this is one thing I realised as a drug-crazed hippie, that if you don't live this second, then it's gone. There's a thing called economic cost or lost opportunity, where if you do one thing, then in some cases you can't do the other thing. And I realised that that's the way it is in most of life. So I've just tried to do as many different things as possible. What it does mean is that I'm not particularly good at anything. So I wasn't the world's best engineer, physicist, mathematician, medical doctor, but I've got a bit of a smattering and I've accidentally ended up in a career where I can then use this knowledge for public good.
Yeah, definitely. What about your parents? They were Polish, both Poland.
Although Poland didn't exist because Have you been to Europe?
I have.
Yeah, well, for me, I went to Europe, and then before I went, I read up on the history. God, they're a nasty bunch of people.
It was
over
the
last 2,000 years. The basic job of everybody in Europe who had any power was to try and kill anybody else who had power and take over their country. So when you say Poland, well, for about 123 years, Poland didn't exist. It had been it had grown to be a very powerful country, and then the neighbours got more powerful and squashed it down to nothing. So my father was born in a country which has been Poland and Germany and Russia and Ukraine, depending on who invaded it. And my mother was from a place that was in Poland but used to be Germany and used to be part of a free state called Danzig. And so my parents were Polish, and my father was highly trained, and my mother actually gave up a scholarship to do hats at Dior in Paris to have me and stay with me and be in Australia. Yeah. So I could have grown up in France if she decided to take that option.
Well, there you go.
See, life takes you through many turns. You've got no control over most of them.
Do you remember when your thirst for knowledge began?
Well, with regard to remember, firstly, most people don't remember anything under the age of 6.
Okay.
It's called infantile amnesia. It was given that name by Sigmund Freud, who blamed it on sex, but then he blamed everything on sex. Instead, we've now found out, and this is a story in my latest book, we've found out that it's due to the fact that when you're a kid of that age, under 6, you're laying down new nerves at the rate of about 700 a second.
Right.
And the old nerves that were there with your memory of your second birthday party, mate, gone.
What about, I said I was never going to ask you any science questions.
Ask me
the
science
show,
questions.
But now
my job.
You've
Lay
got
on
me
it.
On this. You think about back to, and a lot of people have said this to me as well, you think about when you were quite young and you sort of have a memory of yourself, but looking down on yourself.
Yeah.
As if, you know, you want to remember it, but I just can't explain it. You're not actually remembering what happened. You're sort of looking at yourself.
Yeah, they're fake memories.
Fake memories,
yeah.
Exactly.
Now, you can I wrote about this in my 28th book. You can insert false memories into one quarter of people. Have you heard about the classic experiment on that one?
No.
Okay, so you know what Anaheim in California is famous for? The
no.
first Disneyland?
Oh, okay.
Right. So, Elizabeth Loftus was working there, and there was a branch of the University of California at Anaheim. And so she used Disney as her way to insert false memories into people. So she did a two-part experiment, one this year, one next year. Come in, Joel, I'll give you $100 for 1 hour this year, give you $100 in a year's time. And in the best tradition of psychology experiments, she lied to the people.
Right.
I know, I'm sorry, it makes you sad, doesn't it? So she said, we're trying to test how your values change, but instead she was wanting to say a sentence. So she said, oh, come in, Joel, we're going to test your values. Lying to you. Sorry, look, there's been a bit of a delay. Another lie. By the way, and she knew the answer to this, because you had to fill out a form. She said, oh, by the way, have you been to Disneyland? And she knew that the answer would be yes. And you said, yes, Professor Loftus, yes, I have been to Disneyland. And then you say, oh, and then all she wanted was to say the sentence. Well, Joel, do you remember ever going to Disneyland and Daffy Duck giving you a cuddle? And you know, you sort of caught on a hop and you say, yes, no, I don't know, can't remember. And then she said, oh, well, look, the room's clear now, we can do the experiment. And then you'd go off. And then you'd come back a year later, and she'd go through the whole rigmarole. Oh, you must be Joel. I seem to remember we met a year ago. Look, I'm sorry, there's a bit of a delay. Have you been to Disneyland? And then you'd say yes, because she knew that everybody had been to Disneyland. And then she'd ask an open-ended question. She'd say, any memories? Open. And one quarter of the people would say, oh, yes, comma, I remember Daffy Duck giving me a cuddle, which is impossible because the duck that belongs to Disney is
Donald Duck. Yeah, right.
Daffy belongs to Warner Brothers. She had successfully implanted a false memory into one quarter of people.
The mind is a phenomenal.
So I go through life desperately trying to hang on to reality. So I'm looking at things around me thinking, is that real? Is that real? Is that real? And in my effort to try and understand everything, I seem to accidentally create a bewilderment field. So before we had a bewilderment thing happening with some sort of electronic hardware from the days when they didn't even have transistors. So to answer your question about memories from and looking back upon yourself, most of the memories that you have from before the age of 6, people are telling you stuff. Oh, Joel, you were so cute at your fifth birthday party when we hired Kim Kardashian to come and you vomited on her shoes. And then so you'll start telling that as though it happened to you, but they could be lying to you.
Okay, well, there you go.
Okay.
Let's jump a few years in front then. So what about, I mean, you've got quite a few degrees, don't you?
I've got 4 degrees, thank you, taxpayers of Australia. And that's in physics and maths, biomedical engineering, when I designed and built a machine for Fred Hollows to pick up electrical signals off the human retina to diagnose certain types of eye disease, and then also a degree in medicine and a degree in surgery, and also 4 years of non-degree study just for fun in astrophysics, computer science, philosophy, and electrical engineering just to round me off.
Just for fun.
Well, there were gaps in my knowledge.
Well,
And so, I mean, it's the weirdest thing. Like, I knew that there was these devices that you could plug into your house, into your wiring, and they'd work. But I didn't understand how they worked.
So you
did electrical engineering for 1 year just for fun. So I would understand it and how that worked.
Amazing. Am I right in saying that you were also a doctor at the Sydney Children's Hospital?
At the Kids Hospital in Sydney up in Piemont. And it was probably the best job I ever had in my life. But I gave it up when something terrible happened. And the terrible thing was that after 20 years of zero deaths from whooping cough, the media had got into let's try and sell some more dog food. What's the hook that we can use? Oh, vaccinations don't work. And as far as they're concerned, they're selling more dog food. But then the parents, and I was there when the baby died, and the parents said, but we saw on TV that vaccinations don't work, so we didn't get vaccinated against whooping cough. And so now they've got a dead baby. And since then, we've had a steady trickle of dead babies every year. Thank you very much, anti-vaxxers, you naughty people. You're just misguided. Please get enlightened.
Yeah. Well, you can call them much worse when we go into your first song, which is Frank Zappa. What can you tell us about this?
Oh, well, this is when I was a drug-crazed hippie and not into alarm clocks, man. Like as the fascist imperialist oppressors, the running dog lackey oppressors of the working class, the honest proletariat. And yet I had a job as a taxi driver, so I had to be there by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So I rigged up an alarm clock, which was, they had these digital clocks and I rigged it to close the circuit and then it would start a record player going, which would drop a needle. And this was a track that I would have coming on at full volume, Directly From My Heart to You by Frank Zappa. And just listening to that searing violin solo at the beginning.
Here it is. This is Directly From My Heart to You, Frank Zappa.
Thank you.
Dr. Carl's old wake-up song, Directly From My Heart to You by Frank Zappa. My guest today, of course, is Dr. Carl, who considers himself to be a curious optimist. What does that mean?
I've got a sense of curiosity about everything in the world, and if I don't understand it, I try to find out why. So recently I was in Johannesburg, which is a weird, dangerous sort of place. So we were staying at the hotel, sort of inside the airport, and inside the little book that comes with the hotel room, it said, don't answer the door unless you know who they are. And by the way, this is the etiquette you should have for when you are getting carjacked, when you are getting robbed. And in the case of interacting with some of the locals, should you happen to exchange some bodily fluids, make sure you get some HIV prophylaxis straight away. Whereas normally in the hotel book, it says things like, oh, this is a number you ring for room service, and if you want to recycle the towels, just hang them back up again. So at Johannesburg Airport, this really knocked me around. You know how normally you go into an airport, you go to a terminal, you get a ticket, and then you get on to you enter through a gate at that terminal?
Yep.
Not Johannesburg.
Okay.
So if you're flying South African Airlines, you get your ticket at terminal number 2, and then you walk to another terminal. And the trouble was, we already had our ticket, so we just had to go to Terminal 1, but people kept on sending us to Terminal 2, but we couldn't find the gate at Terminal 2. And it was so confusing until I worked out it's about probably the only terminal in the world where the ticket tells you to go to another terminal. I know. So the trouble is, in trying to find out stuff, I'm wandering around in a state of perpetual bewilderment. And the trouble is, this bewilderment field can extend, and I can make people around me confused about things that they thought they knew, like, what time is it? I look at my watch. Is it read time? Oh.
You mentioned before you read how much a year?
$10,000 worth of scientific literature every year.
So that's where you get all your knowledge from? Is that where do you enjoy reading that?
Yeah, it's part of my gig. I read in paper. I read electronically. I used to store it in photocopies. Now I store it electronically as PDF files on my computer. So I just keep on laying down nested files time after time. I keep on burrowing deeper. I think I'm allowed 28 levels of nested files, and I'm down to about 21.
Okay. But what about everything? Is your house like a library now?
Not really. The library sort of shrunk. It's about 4 meters by 4 meters now, so it's not very big anymore.
You were saying before you use stories and stuff to remember, and you obviously have quite a bit of knowledge, but what about the more simpler tasks? Do you ever forget things, something simple like driving, or not that that's simple, but, you know, just things, mundane tasks that we would do day to day? Does that ever leave?
No, because that's wired into muscle memory and a different part of the body and a different part of the brain. However, there is a strange phenomenon which I have, which most people have, where you walk into a room and you forget why you went there.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, it happened to you.
Yeah, I think it's happened to everyone.
Not a sign of either early dementia or of dangerously low blood marijuana levels.
So
this is a story in my latest book, by the way.
Okay.
Because it turns out that if you get mice, as they get older, they behave like humans. They get slower in their cognitive functioning and their realization and their laying down of memories unless you give them a low-level, continuous, slow infusion of marijuana. And then the older mice regain the cognitive function of younger mice.
Really?
And the younger mice, of course, just go off their faces. And the reason is that by coincidence, there's a chemical in cannabis called delta-9-tetrahydrocannabinol.
Easy for you to say.
And by coincidence, your body makes this chemical.
Okay.
In the endocannabinoid system. And you use it for everything from laying down memories to growing new nerves to running your immune system to doing inflammation. If you burn yourself or you get a cut or you get sunburned, it runs through your whole body. And your natural endocannabinoid system, it's present at birth, sort of tickles along slowly until you hit puberty. From puberty till about 20, early 20s, it's just off its face. It's pumping out endocannabinoids like crazy. And in some people in that age group, if they take cannabis, it can reveal schizophrenia, which otherwise might never have been revealed or would have only become obvious in later life. And then from early 20s, when you turn into a boring adult and you suddenly need 8 hours sleep and you can't party till 5 o'clock every morning, then your cannabis levels drop. And so this experiment done with mice shows that their cognitive function is restored. Now, they're doing trials on humans at the moment because the thing is that mice are not humans. So, for example, with Alzheimer's disease, we've got 1,000 treatments, chemical treatments, that work really well on mice with Alzheimer's disease. On humans, 3 of them kind of work, maybe, and the rest do nothing. And then the second thing is that all drugs are poisons. So you've got to be careful of sort of dosing yourself up. But anyway, so the reason you forget when you go into a room is not because you've got dangerously low blood levels of cannabis or early onset dementia. It's the door.
The door puts you off.
The door, because we are wired up to survive. We have had agriculture and written word for, we've had written word for 5,000 years or something, and art for 40,000 years, agriculture for 10 or 20,000 years. But before that, basically, we were low down on a ladder and we could get killed by a passing endangered whale, dinosaur, killer kangaroo, lion, tiger. So if you're in the jungles of Africa, while you're in the jungle, you're looking out for the killer gorilla, and you're looking up and down and around. And as soon as you leave the jungle and you cross the boundary, the door, into the open savannah, you forget about the gorilla. It's not your enemy. Now you've got to look for a new enemy, which is the lion. And so in the same way, you've been working away and you come down for a cup of tea and you walk into the kitchen and then instantly you're looking out for the killer toaster. I mean, this is subconscious. You see, this is a couple of hundred thousand years of evolution. So you're looking out for the killer toaster and the killer dishwasher and the killer light bulb and the room's clear. So you go in and you think, why am I here? And then you think, oh, yeah, cup of tea. So you get the cup of tea and then you go back and you think, what was I doing? It is the door that is evil.
Wow. That's incredible.
Now, what was your question again?
I've actually completely forgotten.
Yeah, me too.
Something to do with doors.
Yeah, something about losing cognitive function. So that's the only loss of cognitive function that I have, but I've had that my whole life.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, so that was the question, whether I'm losing. Well, and I managed to tie an answer to cannabis.
Yes, well done.
So if anybody wants to mail their stash to Joel and me, just sort of leave it at the door here at 2SER. We'll make sure it goes to a good home.
Yeah. Any questions that I have to go straight over that. Any questions that people have asked you that have stood out or have stumped you? Has that ever happened?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah, yeah. And the answer to that is I don't know. But an outstanding question, how strong is the language warning on this station? Is it an adult station?
Look, it is, yes.
Okay, here we go. So a woman rang in and said, hi, Dr. Carl. I said, hi. And she said, look, whenever I'm having oral sex with my husband and his penis hits the back of my throat, I go deaf temporarily. And so I asked all my girlfriends to try it with their husbands and boyfriends, and it happened to them as well. Why?
Okay. And that stumped you, or that was one of the weird questions? Oh, you know the answer.
Oh, well, I worked it out. I could be wrong. Okay, now think about a sheet.
Okay.
Of a clothesline,
mm-hmm.
and it's pegged at the top, and so it blows freely back in the forth in the wind. Any passing breath, it vibrates. It moves a long way, but imagine it's pegged down at the bottom. It doesn't move much at all. Eardrum.
Mm-hmm.
So the sound comes in, you hear it with your eardrum, and when you are listening to the quietest noise you can possibly listen to, your eardrum is going backwards and forwards a distance equal to the diameter of a hydrogen atom.
Right.
Man, that is amazingly small.
Yeah.
We're talking almost certainly quantum effects. Read the book by Jim Khalili called Quantum Life. Actually, it's Jim Al Khalili. So what does the Al mean?
I'm not sure.
He's been to Mecca.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So I've written about this in my last book, The Doctor, about quantum life. And so the eardrum is vibrating backwards and forwards a tiny, tiny amount. Now, you've got a hole from the outside world leading to one side of the eardrum, you know, through your ears, but there's another hole, or two holes, one on each side, leading from the inside of the eardrum down to the back of your throat. And this is the middle ear. And this is the pipe is called the Eustachian tube. So I assumed that when the penis was hitting the back of the throat, it was closing off that pipe and putting a pressure wave up onto the eardrum and then putting a preload and sort of putting a tension on it. So think about the sheet. It's no longer able to vibrate freely.
Yeah.
The same amount of wind is landing on it, but it's sort of pegged down. Anyway, that was the best answer I could come up with on the spur of the moment.
It's good enough for me. Well, we're going to have to get into your new song now, The Preachers. What can you tell us about this?
I went to a gig by The Preachers up at Splendor in the Grass, and I heard this song, which I'd never heard before, and I thought, I love it. It's as simple as that. Lay it on us, baby.
preachers there. Is this how you feel? Dr. Carl, I like to ask brilliant minds such as your
own. I'm not brilliant. My IQ is only barely above average. I've got a good memory. No, I've got a terrible memory. Anyway, go on. Sorry.
You can't take a compliment, can you?
Not when it's not what deserved. Okay. I'm pretty good at wiring, though. Oh, God, you should see the wiring I do for the internet and in cars. It's beautiful, man.
Yes?
Oh, it's labelled and everything.
Okay, well, there you go.
And nothing vibrates or breaks down. Do it once, do it right.
All right. What are your views on religion?
Religion is something that the human brain seems to have spent a lot of time living with and inventing or having as part of its psyche. And I can see advantages that come from religion in certain types of society. Now, if you stand back from religion and observe what it's built on, it's the exact opposite of what science is built on. So science is built on provable and facts and things that you can prove are wrong, you know, whereas religion is built upon faith and specifically does not need proof. So I see them both as perfectly valid forms of human expression. Mm-hmm. Like some people like to wear bright clothes, some people like to be religious. But compared to science, it's completely at right angles to it. They don't intersect. And it can be used for good and it can be used for bad. Like science can be used for good and bad. And clothing, I can't see how clothing could be used for bad. Unless it's really uncomfortable. Like high heels that hurt. I mean, okay, that's used for bad. But they look so nice.
Very good. What about when people are skeptics or they dismiss things that are facts? Does that frustrate you?
It's part of the human condition. I remember when I was a drug-crazed hippie that I was absolutely astonished that smoking cigarettes was bad for you.
Okay.
And so I was smoking cigarettes and people said, you know, they're bad for you. I said, nah. And then somebody said, it's bad for you. I said, what do you mean they're bad for you? Don't you know about the Surgeon General's report in the United States? Don't you know about the report that came out of the United Kingdom? No. So I went into a library, these places where they had information. And to my surprise, it turned out that smoking is bad for your health.
Wow.
So in my 20s, I gave up smoking. So I made a mistake and I changed. And also, I do remember, talking about people believing crazy stuff, at some stage, ending up at the Blue Mountains waiting for a giant tidal wave to wipe out Sydney. I really believed it.
Okay.
Well, a few friends had told me that it happened.
Right.
And so I believed them.
Okay.
And so I went to the Blue Mountains waiting to see the tidal wave and nothing happened. So then we just had a party instead. But I was there ready for it. Like, I had the essentials of life. I had my combi van and I had it packed up with a 20 kilogram bag of brown rice and some soybeans and a 4 gallon drum of Kero and a kerosene burner and a kerosene light.
Well, there you go.
And tobacco. I was ready for anything, man. I actually believed it because a few people told me.
Okay.
So I can understand that people are not applying their full horsepower in their brain to understand the things that are floating around inside their brains.
Right.
I've been guilty.
Let's look about your new book, Carl, the Universe and Everything.
A rather modest name, don't you think? I'm sorry about that. I apologize.
What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's got a whole bunch of stories in it on all sorts of different topics. So, for example, you've heard of refried beans?
I haven't.
You know, like in Spanish food, Mexican food?
Oh, sure, yeah, of course.
They lied to you.
They're not refried.
Exactly,
not
they lied to you. Right, re normally means do again. I'll rearrange, I'll reschedule, I'll revisit. But in Spanish, re means very. They haven't been fried twice. They've just been really, really fried. And then there's a story about aircon being sexist and how we're trying to make a new uterus and how some people are chronically late and how you can avoid being chronic late. We mentioned how marijuana works on elderly mice, mature mice, to make their cognitive function better and how they might be, they're doing studies on this. And also how Wi-Fi can spy on you. Do you know your Wi-Fi unit can spy on you?
I did not know this.
So you got the Wi-Fi unit in your room and you're on your phone and you say, ah, what's the weather tomorrow? And so you dial up the BOM, the Bureau of Meteorology, and it sends a signal to your Wi-Fi unit and the Wi-Fi unit then accesses the internet and then sends a signal back to you. And then it looked at the signal you first sent and then it's always monitoring the signal that it receives. Now, you might think, Joel, and you're probably right, that you, Joel, are the highest point, the very pinnacle of human evolution.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah, true. But from a Wi-Fi unit point of view, you're just a bag of water and meat and gristle.
Right.
And you interfere with the signal.
Okay.
And by looking at the strength of the Wi-Fi signal, not the content, just how the Wi-Fi unit has to ramp the signal up and down in talking to you as you walk around the room, we can tell how many people are in a room, what they're doing, what they're moving, what they're typing, and sometimes what they are saying with their mouths, because my mouth makes one sound for O and a different sound for P and M and Q. And so your Wi-Fi unit can spy on you. Yes, Joel, you're in the last generation to have known privacy. When you were a kid, you might have had some. Wow. Ever since then, it's gone, mate.
Oh, sorry, children of today.
And the future, there ain't no privacy.
Yeah, okay, well, there
you
go.
So since 2007, everything that you said on a phone call has been recorded, and everything you did on the internet has been recorded.
Uh-oh. What about, where is this book available, I should ask that? And when?
Good bookshops of high moral value, Booktopia, and pretty well bookshops and Booktopia. That's it. Just anywhere. Bookshop.
As of today?
Now. As of now. And bright yellow colour. But if you don't want to buy it, you don't have to. The stories are available in a much shorter version on my ABC homepage. Go to drcarl.com. You can get them there. And there's shorter versions if you can't afford to buy it now. I'm feeling your pain, sister and brother. Just get the free version. And when you can afford to get a book and then read it and then give it away to somebody else. That way you get two values out of it.
This is your 43rd book.
Number 43, yep.
Your first one was in 1985, Great Moments in Science. Do you feel there's more in you?
It's not in me, it's the scientist. There's that wonderful phrase, let nobody else's work evade your eyes, so plagiarize. So the scientists are discovering all this stuff all the time, and it's just blowing my mind. Yeah. So in my last book, we humans, a century after Einstein said it was possible, had actually built a gravitational wave detector and had picked up gravitational waves from two black holes running into each other. It took us a century to do that. And then the book came out. And then this year, we started the astronomy of the new form of astronomy called gravitational wave astronomy, because we saw that we picked up the gravitational wave coming from two neutron stars running into each other. And then we looked at it and picked up gamma rays at 1.8 seconds later, and then visible light at 10 hours, and then at 11 days X-rays, and at 15 days radio waves. So we've invented a brand new form of astronomy. And in the same way that Galileo, with his telescope, tipped over the apple cart and opened up all this new scientific stuff four centuries ago, there's going to be new stuff. So with your family members, your nieces and your nephews, in 30 years' time, you could say, come on, little Jacinta, I've finished cooking your lunch, come inside. And she'd say, no, I'm still playing with the antimatter, Uncle Joel. So it's going to be a whole different world.
What a time to be alive. We have to quickly play your Borrowed song now. You've run with the Avalanches.
Mate, it is classic Borrowed. It's got a bit of comedy, got a bit of word. It's got music. They're a great stage performance. Mate, you got to love it.
Yeah, this is Frontier Psychiatrist.
Is Dexter ill today?
Mr. Kirk, Dexter's in school.
I'm afraid he's not, Miss Fishmore. Dexter's truancy problem is way out of hand. The Baltimore County School Board have decided to expel Dexter from the entire public school system.
Oh, Mr. Kirk, I'm as upset as you to learn Dexter's truancy. But surely expulsion is not the answer.
I'm afraid expulsion is the only answer. It is the opinion of the entire staff that Dexter is criminally insane.
That boy needs therapy.
Psychosomatic.
And that boy needs therapy.
Purely psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
Lie down on the couch.
What does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Granny Gazoo, let's have a chew. Now when I count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.
Business continues below.
Did I ever tell you the story about
cowboys?
Midgets.
The Indians.
And what frontier psychiatrist?
I felt strangely hypnotized.
Christmas, my girlfriend, I got me
the violin, violin, violin.
Frontier psychiatrist.
Wow, fully borrowed, bits from everywhere. There's a bit of sort of Spanish non-flamenco music at the end.
A few movie quotes, I think, yeah, as well. And yeah, they got a bit of everything.
Really borrowed. Beautifully borrowed.
So you mentioned earlier you were at one point a roadie.
I was a roadie for Bo Diddley.
Diddley, yeah.
Yeah.
How was that?
A great education. I learned a lot for him. On one occasion I said, Bo, how come you're playing this song like it's the first time you ever played it? I know you've played it 130 times so far. And he said, because for the audience, it's their first time, and they deserve, they've paid for, a good performance, and I'm going to give it to them. And that really resonated with me.
Yeah,
I thought,
I think
what a good bloke you are.
Brilliant. Now, in 2003, you were named Australian Father of the Year. How was that?
It was weird, because I wasn't actually married, and I thought that was part of having to be Father of the Year. And I didn't think I was that good, although I came into being a dad later in life, and I love my children to pieces, and I love my family to pieces, and I'm very honoured, but I don't think I'm worthy of it, but I'm very honoured.
You have three kids, don't you?
Yeah, one of each sex.
Are they all?
Just kidding. Okay. Well, it turns out there's a really good article in the October Scientific American entirely on gender. And there's a really good infographic that covers two pages. And at one end, you got your absolutely classic XY male. And at the other end on the far right, you got your classic XX female. And then there's all these ones in between, just from a genetic, like there's XO and 46XXY, and there's a whole bunch of things, and it really gives you a nice impression. Yeah. So, in fact, Joan of Arc was probably a man with testicular feminization or adrenal hyperplasia, because the British noted that she hadn't shaved, but she had no armpit or pubic hair. So she had the external primary and secondary female genitalia, but no armpit or pubic hair. And there's a chronic adrenal hyperplasia and testicular feminization can cause a person who is XY to have external female genital sexual characteristics, but nobody here. Anyway, she might not have been.
There you go.
Or he.
Okay, they. My last question for you today is simply this. Are you still completely surprised and fascinated by things you learn?
Oh, yeah. Every day this stuff comes just flooding down from the scientists. And if you imagine the body of knowledge that we have, sort of metaphorically imagine it like a ball, well, the ball is getting bigger, but it's growing into something that's infinite, the universe. Mm. So each time it gets a little bit bigger, there's more things that we don't know. So simultaneously, we know a little bit more, but because the surface area goes up as a square of the radius, there's even more stuff that we don't know, and I find that just so exciting. Like right now in science, we can see with our various telescopes about 5% of the universe, can't see 95%, the dark matter and the dark energy. And when we do work out what that is, it'll be new stuff that the next generation down the line will play with and not even realize that we never even knew what it was or wasn't.
Incredible. Dr. Kyle, I cannot thank you enough for today. Thank you so much for coming in and being part of this show. I hope people who have listened have learned a little bit more about you.
Oh, well, I don't know if there's that much to me. You see, if it's just about me, well, then that's a sort of like a closed pathway. I see myself more as a conduit. So you've got the scientists and medical and engineer on that side and the general public over on the other side, and I'm the pathway through which it, one of the many pathways. And so what I am is irrelevant. It's just that the knowledge that comes through to the general public is what I'm really on about.
Now you have to take us out with your blues song.
Now, which one was that? I'm trying to remember. I've got so many blues ones. Oh, my God, Robert Johnson. I remember they had this CD collection going. You buy the newsagent. Remember the newsagents in the old days?
Yes.
And the first CD was $1.95, and then the second one was $2.95, then they were $7 each. And the first one was Robert Johnson, and he played this song, the Lembit song, and there was this wonderful line in it. And I thought, what the hell did he just say? And the line is, oh, yeah, you can squeeze my lemon, baby, squeeze my lemon, baby, until the juice go running down my leg. And I thought, did you say that? And a lot of people have done the Lemon song in different versions. Just chase it down. The original, though, Robert Johnson, just glorious.
Well, this is Led Zeppelin's version.
Oh, man. Led Zeppelin are so raunchy. They enjoy the lemon squeezing.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kyle.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.